6. The Oregon swept past the Paracel Islands under a pitch-black night sky. The air was liquid with rain that fell in sheets. The wind was blowing in gusts without firm direction or purpose. For several minutes it would rake the Oregon amidships, then quickly change to blow bow on or stern first. The soggy flags on the stern were pivoting on their staffs as fast as a determined Boy Scout trying to light a fire with a stick. Inside the control room, Franklin Lincoln stared at the radar screen. The edge of the storm began petering out just before the ship passed the 20-degree latitude line. Walking over to a computer terminal in the control room, he entered commands and waited while the satellite images of the Chinese coastline loaded. A haze of smog could be seen over Hong Kong and Macau. He glanced over at Holly Kasim, who was sharing the night shift. Kasim was sound asleep, his feet up on the control console, his mouth was partially opened. Kasim could sleep through a hurricane, Lincoln thought, or in this part of the ocean, a cyclone. At the same time the Oregon was steaming west, Winston Spencer awoke, startled. Earlier in the evening he had visited the Golden Buddha at Ama. The icon was still in its mahogany crate, sitting upright, door opened, in the room where it had been taken. Spencer had gone alone. Simple common sense dictated that as few people as possible know the actual location, but he'd found the experience unnerving. Spencer knew the icon was nothing more than a mass of precious metal and stones, but for some strange reason, the object seemed to have a life force. The chunk of gold appeared to glow in the dim room, as if illuminated by a light from within. The large jade eyes seemed to follow his every move, and while its visage might appear benign to some, only that of a pot-bellied smiling prophet, to Spencer the image seemed to be mocking him. As if he had not known it before, earlier in the evening Spencer had become certain that what he had done was not a stroke of genius. The Golden Buddha was not some canvas daubed with paint. It was the embodiment of reverence, crafted with love and respect. And Spencer had swiped it like candy in a drugstore. The Dalai Lama listened to the slow flow of water over the smooth stones while he meditated. On the far reaches of his mind was static, and he willed the disturbance to clear. He could see the ball of light in the center of his skull, but the edges were rough and pulsating. Slowly, he smoothed the signals, and the ball began to collapse in on itself until only a pinpoint of white light remained. Then he began to scan his physical shell. There was a disturbance, and it was growing. 18 minutes later, he came back into his shell and rose to his feet. 8 yards away, sitting under a green canvas awning alongside the kidney-shaped pool on the estate in Beverly Hills, was his Chikya Kenpo. The Dalai Lama walked over. The Hollywood actor who was his host smiled and rose to his feet. "It is time for me to go home," the Dalai Lama said. There was no pleading or disagreement from the actor. "Your Holiness," he said, "let me call for my jet." In the north of Tibet, on the border between Utsang and Amdo province, the Basatong Wula Shan Mountains towered over the plains. The peak was a snow-capped sentinel, watching over an area where few men trod. To the untrained eye, the lands around Basatong Wula Shan looked barren and desolate, a wasteland best left alone and deserted. On the surface, this may have been true. But underneath, hidden for centuries, was a secret known only by a few. A yak walked slowly along a rocky path. On his back was a black mynah bird that remained silent as he hitched a ride. Slowly at first, but growing in intensity, a light tremor rippled across the land. The yak began to shake in fear, causing the bird to take to the air. Digging his cloven hooves into the soil, he stood firm as the land trembled. Then slowly the disruption passed, and the earth stilled. The yak resumed his journey. Within minutes, the fur on his legs and lower body was covered with a haze from a mineral that over countless generations had made some men rich and others go mad. Vice President of Operations Richard Truitt was still awake. His body clock had yet to adjust, and his night was still Macau's day. Logging onto his computer, he checked for messages. One had been sent by Cabrillo a few hours before. Like every email he received from the chairman, this one was short. Confirmation received from the home of George. All systems go. ETA, 33 hours. The CIA was still in, and the Oregon would arrive in less than 2 days' time. Truett had a lot of work to complete in a short span. Calling down to the hotel's 24-hour room service, he ordered a meal of bacon and eggs. Then he walked into the bathroom to shave, shower, and pick his disguise.